Chapter 28
"Get out of my way, kid,"
the umpire said, his hand snaking past Josh and pushing open the glass door.
"No wonder you got hit in the face, standing around, blocking people's ways."
Josh touched the healing scar on his cheek, stepped aside, and followed the umpire with his eyes as he limped across the parking lot and climbed into a rusty red pickup truck. Josh headed for the road, his instincts telling him to follow the man as far as he could. When the red pickup reached the street, it went left. Josh took off after it, sprinting down the sidewalk as the truck slowly pulled away. At the end of the street, it turned right. Josh thought about giving up, knowing there was no way he could follow a truck on foot, but something told him to do his best. He took off after the truck, and just as he reached the corner, his efforts were rewarded. He caught the flash of a yellow fender as the red truck disappeared into a driveway no more than 2 blocks up the street. Josh trudged up River Street until he came to the spot where the truck had disappeared. 2 small stone pillars marked the gravel drive that cut into the center of a woods. On one pillar, a black sign with fluorescent orange letters announced, "No trespassing." With a thumping heart, Josh crossed the street and dove into the underbrush, keeping the gravel drive in sight and staying parallel to its path in the web of tree trunks and dappled sunlight. He tried to walk quietly, but sticks and leaves snapped and rustled beneath his feet. He looked around. Other than the long gravel drive, he saw nothing except thick woods heavy with vines and brambles. After a particularly nasty patch of thorns forced him deeper into the woods and out of sight of the gravel road, he found himself without a marker of any kind. He listened, but heard only birds twittering and an airplane high overhead, which told him nothing. Hot frustration with a froth of fear bubbled up inside as he asked himself how he could get lost in a woods so close to the middle of a town. He turned and tried to retrace his steps to get back to the driveway, pushing through briars and thickets of close-knit saplings. Finally, the thick knot of vegetation opened into a cool wood of towering trees. He crossed a gurgling stream and climbed its far bank. When he reached its lip, he saw something through the trees, rising up nearly above their tops. As he drew closer, he began to use the trunks of massive trees for cover until he stood at the edge of an unkempt lawn, staring up at a weathered gray house with steep, pointy roofs, warped shutters, and gingerbread trim broken with rot. The back lawn of the old house sloped downward, and through the trees Josh saw the glint of sunlight on the river. The only sign of human life was the red pickup truck parked in front of a detached garage on the far side of the house. Josh circled the house, darting from tree to tree. He passed beneath a porch that wrapped itself around the entire back of the house, then rounded the corner of the far side. He shivered when he saw a couple dozen crooked and crumbling gravestones poking their heads up from weedy beds in the side yard. When the back door swung open with a creak, Josh ducked for cover but peered out to see the umpire in a floppy pair of flowery swim trunks. On his face, he wore dark sunglasses and a huge smile. Under his arm was a newspaper, a towel, and a bottle of suntan oil. The umpire made his way down the hill toward an aging boathouse with a small dock jutting out into the water. When the umpire emerged from the boathouse carrying a gas can, Josh retreated to the front of the house, studying it for signs of life before taking off at a fast walk down the gravel driveway, happy to be getting out of there without having to trek back through the woods. The long gravel drive wound through the woods, and the stone pillars had just come into sight when he heard the crunch of gravel behind him. Before he could react, the red truck appeared like something out of a bad dream, moving fast. It blared its horn. Josh jumped, stumbled, and fell directly in front of its path. The truck slid toward him in a spray of gravel and a swirl of dust.
Chapter 29. When Josh opened his eyes, he saw the truck's steaming nose just inches from his face. The umpire appeared over him, shaking a bony finger.
"Are you crazy? I almost wrecked my truck,"
the man said, screeching like a ghoul with wide, bloodshot eyes, pointing at the steaming truck.
"Who are you? You see that sign? You're trespassing."
Josh scrambled to his feet. He froze for a moment, and the umpire reached to grab him. Josh turned and bolted. The man hollered after him, but Josh never looked back. He hit the street and sprinted toward Maine. When he got there, he glanced quickly over his shoulder, saw no one behind him, and ran straight for the Hall of Fame. He ran so hard that by the time he got there, he thought he'd be sick. In the alcove between the different wings of the building, he braced his hand on a bench and fell to a knee, breathing deep through his nose.
"Dude, where have you been?" Benji asked, poking Josh's shoulder. "I found the babe. You gotta go back in with me. I swear, you can see a resemblance."
Josh looked up and squinted at Benji in the sunlight.
"Resemblance to what?"
"Me,"
Benji said, holding up his cell phone.
"Me and the babe."
Josh took a deep breath and shook his head.
"I'm telling you,"
Benji said, holding forth the screen until Josh looked.
"Hey, what's the matter?"
"I just saw a payoff, that's what," Josh said, rising to his feet and glancing around at the steady stream of visitors washing past them.
"Payoff for what?" Benji asked.
"Not so loud," Josh said, pressing a finger to his lips. He took Benji by the elbow and led him down the street, away from the crowd, and then told him what he'd seen. The meeting between the umpire and Myron, where the umpire had gone, the red truck, the gravestones in a small cemetery outside the house, and how Josh had almost been run over by the guy.
"What? The umpire lives here?"
Benji asked, stopping at the corner in front of Carmen Esposito's Italian ice cream.
"Maybe,"
Josh said, moving aside for a family with several small children who jingled a bell on the door as they stepped out onto the sidewalk from the ice cream store.
"But the truck had a Pennsylvania license plate. The ump acted like he owned the place, though, screaming about trespassing and all. It's a pretty creepy place, whatever it is, and I swear the guy looks like he crawled out of one of those graves in the side lawn."
"So the ump got paid to make those crappy calls?" Benji said, wrinkling his face in disgust.
"That's incredible. How the heck can you win against that?
How much was it?"
"I don't know," Josh said, shaking his head. "The envelope was pretty thick, and you can't compete with that. The calls that guy made today?"
"So," Benji said, "no way we can win this thing. Should we tell your dad?" Josh thought for a minute, then shook his head.
"No, he can't do anything."
"We just let them do it?"
Benji said.
"No, we find out what's going on," Josh said. "Maybe we can take a picture of that meeting or something. Myron giving him the cash."
"You think they'll keep paying him?"
Benji asked.
"I don't know," Josh said. "But it looked to me like the ump fixed the game this morning. Then they paid him off. Maybe they hold back the money until he comes through. If so, we've got to catch them in the act. We'll get a copy of the schedule and just see when the Comets play next."
"But there are like 8 games tomorrow. And that's just counting the teams that are still alive,"
Benji said, peering over Josh's shoulder into the big bay window of the ice cream shop.
"You think it'll be the same umpire?"
"I don't know," Josh said. "Maybe he's got that fixed, too." Benji wasn't listening. He was bobbing his head around to get a good look into the window.
"I know, Benji," Josh said with a sigh. "You need an ice cream."
"That's not what I'm looking at, dude," Benji said, pointing. Chapter 30. The bell on the door to the ice cream shop jingled. Josh turned around and groaned when he saw who it was. Jaden had her arm hooked through Mickey Jr.'s arm, both of them eating ice cream cones. She leaned over and licked Mickey Jr.'s mint chocolate chip cone, and they laughed together. Her eyes went right past Josh.
Josh reached out and touched her arm as she walked by.
"Jaden," he said, "can I talk to you?"
"Oh, hi, Josh,"
she said, acting as if she hadn't seen him.
"Sure. What's up?"
"Alone?" Josh said, nodding at Mickey.
"I think that whatever you have to say, you can say in front of Mickey," Jaden said.
"Dude, you're so lame," Benji said to her. "After everything we've done for you, this is how you act?"
"Let's see,"
Jaden said, glaring at Benji.
"What have you done for me, Lido? You've teased me. You've insulted me. You've embarrassed me.
Josh needs to talk to you," Benji said. "That should be enough."
"You guys go ahead," Mickey said, holding up his cell phone. "I need to make a call anyway. I'll wait for you on that bench around the corner, Jaden."
"Mickey," Jaden said, "you don't have to."
"No, that's okay," Mickey said.
He gave her hand a pat and unhooked his arm. They watched him round the corner, eating chocolate sprinkles off his mint chocolate chip.
"Josh, loan me a 5, will you?" Benji said. "I need a double decker before we hit double day field. You want something too?
I might need 10. Josh fished $10 out of his pocket and handed it to Benji. He asked for 3 scoops of chocolate on a cone and watched Benji disappear into the shop with a jingle of the bells.
"Can we walk?"
Josh asked.
"Not far,"
she said, nodding toward where Mickey had gone.
"I don't want to be rude."
"Jaden," Josh said, "I feel like all of a sudden we're not friends anymore, and I don't even know exactly why."
"But you know partly why, right?"
she said, licking her cone as they took slow steps down the shady side of the street.
"You act like you've known Mickey for years," Josh said.
"You just met the guy. You have no idea what he's about." "I have instincts," she said.
"Well, instinct this," Josh said, as he told her the story of what he'd seen, trying to read her face as she listened, but coming up with nothing. Finally, he finished.
"And you went in there, even though it said no trespassing?" Jaden asked.
"I had to follow the guy," Josh said.
"So you saw an old house and a guy who yelled at you after you almost made him crack up his truck. How does that equate to cheating?"
she said, throwing her hands up and turning to go.
"Hopefully for you, Josh, you won't get in trouble for trespassing."
"Jaden,
hey, wait,"
Josh said, hurrying to catch up and seeing Lido step out of the ice cream store and head their way with 2 cones, licking them alternately.
"You can't tell me you didn't see what I saw in that game."
She spun on him, her face pinched and red.
"Tell me a baseball game where the losing team doesn't say the ump robbed them." "You can't." "That's right. It always happens. So you see Myron and the ump. So that ump is Justin Seavers, the head umpire for the tournament. I met him before the game. Myron was probably coordinating the media for the next couple games and making sure the umpires who call the Comets games are okay with it. They're talking about using footage in some movie. He gave Seavers an envelope, right?"
"Yes," Josh said.
"Full of money?"
"I think," Josh said.
"For the payoff."
Before either of them could say another word, Benji popped up between them with 2 cones, handing the triple chocolate to Josh and putting his cone into Jaden's face.
"I thought they said moose craps," Benji said excitedly. "And I was like, dude, I know this is supposed to be some special Italian ice cream, but who wants to eat something with a name like moose craps? And they're like, no, dude, it's moose tracks. And I taste it, even though it looks like craps. And hey, Jaden, you gotta try this."
Jaden pushed his hand away, but Benji held the cone up again, dabbing the end of her nose with it. Jaden growled and grabbed the ice cream cone and smeared it right in his face before she stomped away. Benji stood for a minute, wiping his face, licking his fingers, and staring sadly at the lump of ice cream melting on the sidewalk.
"Dude,"
he said, looking sadly at Josh,
"what was that all about?"
Josh shrugged. Benji turned and stared through the window of the ice cream store and the crowd of people.
"That line took me forever," he said.
"You going back for more?" Josh asked.
"I thought we were going to see the sights, the babe, Doubleday Field."
Benji sighed and said,
"You know I got to."
Benji's shoulder slumped as he went back inside for a fresh cone. Josh sat on the ledge and finished his ice cream, staring at the brick corner where Jaden had disappeared, thinking about how wrong things had gone. He wasn't sure exactly why or what to do about it. He was startled when Myron suddenly rounded the corner with his face glazed in sweat.
"Hey," he said like some long-lost friend, "you're Josh, right?"
"Yes."
Myron reached out with a long arm and snatched a handful of Josh's t-shirt. He yanked him forward close enough for Josh to smell the sickening sweetness of menthol cigarettes on Myron's breath. Josh tried to pull away, dropping his ice cream cone, but Myron's grip only tightened, and Josh could feel the collar of his t-shirt cutting into his skin. Myron's eyes lurked beneath his heavy brows, darting back and forth like roaches scrambling in a spotlight.
"Come on," he said,
dragging Josh toward the black limo that cruised up next to the curb.
"I just heard your little friend telling Mickey Jr. a funny story. You and I need to talk."
Chapter 31.
"Relax, you're fine," Myron said, easing back into the limo's seat and lighting a cigarette. "Don't pee your pants."
"My friend," Josh said.
He sat on the bench seat sideways, and as the car pulled away, he saw Benji burst out from the ice cream shop with his new cone held high above his head like some kind of gold medal.
"The fat kid?"
Myron asked, raising an eyebrow and motioning with his thumb.
"He'll be fine, too. That ice cream will keep his mouth busy for a minute or two. You and I need to talk, though."
"You're kidnapping me," Josh said. Sweat broke out under his arms.
"Don't be a punk,"
Myron said with a growl, blowing a cloud of menthol smoke his way.
"We're not even having this conversation."
Josh coughed.
"You think you saw something today?"
Myron asked, smoke curling up from his nostrils.
"You think you're going to mess with the outcome of this tournament? Try to sling some mud at one of the greatest baseball players who ever lived? Ha!"
Myron leaned forward with the cigarette dangling from his lower lip.
"That's not how it works. We'll bury you and your old man so fast you'll think you're a tulip bulb. Do you know what those reporters would do to get an exclusive sit-down with Mickey Mullen on the set of his next movie? Mickey Mullen has the media eating out of his hand. We own the media, and if we ask, they'll paint a picture of you and your dad that'll make a cow patty look pretty."
"My dad's a good coach," Josh said. "He was a first-round pick out of high school."
Myron removed the cigarette from his mouth and flicked the ashes on the floor. He smiled from ear to ear and said,
"You mean that old washed-up minor leaguer who tried to pump his kid full of steroids, then sold out his business partner to the cops so he could slip into his own deal with Nike? That dad? It's all how you look at it, see?"
Josh felt his face bunch up. Myron enraged him, but he also made him afraid. He wanted to punch him, but something so clearly sinister about the ape-like man let Josh know that he wouldn't last 2 seconds.
"You really want to win this tournament by cheating?" Josh asked.
Myron raised both eyebrows.
"What's the difference how we win it? We'll win it. That's a story. That's life. The strong survive, kid. You think you're stronger than me? You think you can outsmart, out-hustle, or out-fight me? Make a move."
Myron stared at him with his beetle-black eyes until Josh dropped his head.
"Pull over," Myron said,
pushing a button and talking into a speaker that Josh knew must go to the driver up front behind his partition of glass. The car pulled over to the curb. They'd only gone 2.5 blocks.
"Get out," Myron said,
flinging open the door.
"You don't say a word about any of this to anyone. You don't even let me catch you even looking at Mickey or his son cross-eyed, or the only thing you and your dad will have going with Nike is the pair of used sneakers they give you at the rescue mission when you're living on the street. You better leave the girl alone, too, while you're at it."
Josh climbed out and stood on the curb. A shiver went down his spine as the long, dark car rounded the corner. When he got back to the ice cream shop, Benji was gone. Josh peered around the corner and saw no sign of Jaden and Mickey on the bench either, so he made his way back to the shuttle stop, As he turned the corner, he saw the powder blue bus just pulling away in a heavy gray cloud of diesel. He ran to catch it, but its gears roared and clanked, and Josh could just imagine the grumpy lady in her Red Sox cap sneering at him in the rearview mirror.
"Shoot,"
Josh said, knowing it would be another hour before he could get a ride back. He stuck his hands in his pockets and made his way to Pioneer Alley, where he poked around in the souvenir shops until it was time to catch the next bus. The round, grumpy lady cackled at him softly as he stepped onto the bus along with a small crowd of people from the camp, some with the Titans, some not. Josh took a seat in the back corner, not interested in having a conversation and only able to think about the bad things he'd like to do to Jaden, knowing it was she who had said something in front of Myron. When he got back to the Beaver Valley campsite, he found his parents down at the edge of the pond. His dad lay back on a blanket, coated in suntan lotion and filling out the lineup card for their next game, while Laurel splashed her feet in the water under the protective wing of his mom.
"Benji's looking for you," his mom said. "I told him to check the cabin. Is something wrong? You look upset."
"I missed the dang shuttle bus and had to wait around an hour for it," Josh said. "That's all."
"We'll be eating in about 45 minutes, his father said without looking up from his coaching book. "Then we got batting practice to get ready for tomorrow. I know you guys are thinking about the Comets, but we've got to beat the Toronto Eagles and this Corcoran kid, then two other good teams, or we won't even get to the Comets. We'll do a team campfire after practice. Should be fun."
Inside the cabin, Benji sat on the couch, munching on a bag of barbecue Fritos and staring at the wall in a daze.
"Hey," Benji said, looking up at him. "I don't know how the Pioneers ever lived without TV. This place is boring me to tears. Where you been? I came out of Esposito's and all I see is melted ice cream."
"Have you seen Jaden?" Josh asked, scowling.
"Just when you did," Benji said, offering him the bag of Fritos.
Josh ignored the bag and turned to go.
"Dude,"
Benji said, catching up with him on the grass and hustling alongside as Josh strode down the line of cabins.
"What's up with you?"
"She's a traitor," Josh said.
"You can do better than her anyway," Benji said. "Remember Sheila Conway? The blonde with the older boyfriend who loved you? That's more your speed. You're the man, Josh. You don't need Jaden Niedermeyer. So where are you going?"
"To her cabin," Josh said, "if she's even there."
"I bet she is," Benji said. "I saw that white limo pull up when I was looking for you. She got out and that Mickey the mullet-head, maggot-faced Mullen was like kissing her goodbye."
Josh stopped to look at Benji and said, "She kissed him?" Chapter 32.
"Well," Benji said, holding up his hands, "not exactly. But it was like that. I said to myself, I said, dude, she is so going to kiss him."
"But she didn't."
"No, but that's next, I'm telling you,"
Benji said, making kissing noises.
"You don't look at each other standing there like that, all smiling and everything, when some serious kissing isn't just around the next bend. Trust me, I know about these things."
"How do you know?" Josh asked.
"Genetics," Benji said with a simple shrug. "I was built for this kind of stuff."
"Now I've heard everything," Josh said, heading for Jaden's cabin again.
"Yep," Benji said. "Ladies and home runs."
Josh kept going.
"What happened to you anyway?" Benji asked, catching up. "You still didn't tell me."
"I was," Josh said, as the image of Myron's dark, shifty eyes lurking beneath their thick brows filled his brain. He could practically feel the man's iron grip. "I saw someone from behind limping down the street. I thought it was that ump and I followed him."
"Did you see anything?" Benji asked.
"No," Josh said. "Wrong guy. And I can't believe you just left."
"I looked all over," Benji said. "Jaden and Mullethead were gone, so I thought maybe you went with them or something. I didn't know. You didn't say anything. What was I supposed to do?"
"Nothing," Josh said. The two of them reached the tiny cabin belonging to Jaden and her father. Josh put his hand on the railing and climbed the steps while Benji hung back. The cabin had a screen door and Josh could see right in.
Dr. Niedermeyer was sitting at the small table working at his computer. When Josh knocked, Dr. Niedermeyer removed the small round glasses from his face and rubbed his nose, telling him to come in.
"That's okay, Dr. Niedermeyer," Josh said. "I don't want to disturb you. I'm just looking for Jaden."
"Come in for a minute, will you, Josh?" Dr. Niedermeyer said. "I'd like to talk to you." Josh looked back down the stairs just in time to see Benji ducking behind the side of the cabin. He shook his head and pushed open the creaky screen door. "Soda?" Dr. Niedermeyer asked, pointing to a cooler on the floor.
"I'm okay, Dr. Niedermeyer," Josh said.
"Sit, please." Josh sat down and looked at his sneakers.
"Josh, I don't want to be that dad that gets involved in everything his daughter is doing," Dr. Niedermeyer said. "But Jaden's all I really have, and without her mom, well, I guess I worry for two parents. I know how much she likes you, and, well, I hate to put you in a bad spot, but something's wrong with her, and for the first time in her life, she won't talk to me about it. I know you two have been through a lot together, with that Rocky Valentine thing and the steroids and all, and I know there's no one in the world she cares about more than you. There isn't anything she wouldn't do for you. So, I'm sorry, but can you tell me what's going on?"
"Why do you say something is wrong?" Josh asked.
"Because when I asked her," Dr. Niedermeyer said, "she ran out of here crying. I went looking for her to make sure she was okay, and I saw her on the walking trail down by the stream, just sitting there on a rock, looking into the water. I thought it was best to let her be for now. I came back to try and do some work, but all I'm really thinking about is her. Can you tell me what's wrong?"
Josh looked up at the doctor's pleasant face. He was a thin man with straight dark hair that hung in a small mess. The only physical quality he and Jaden seemed to share was their gold-flecked green eyes. Josh had never seen him look so sad.
"I think I should talk to her to make sure myself," Josh said. "That's kind of why I came."
Dr. Niedermeyer studied him for a moment before nodding and saying, "If you follow those red markers through the woods, it'll take you right to her." Josh thanked him and trod down the steps. He was halfway to the woods when Benji caught up to him.
"Dude, what happened?" Benji asked. "Does he know she's hooked up with Maggot Head? Where is she?"
"Let me go find Jaden by myself," Josh said. "I'll meet you back at the cabin for dinner."
Benji took hold of Josh's arm and said,
"You gotta promise me one thing, Josh. I'll go, but you gotta be strong. You gotta put Jaden in her place at the back of the line. You can't let her smile at you like she can do and you melt like popcorn butter. You gotta be firm and tell her the deal, how she betrayed her friends for some California mope. With his tan and his girly looks and all his money and private jets and mansions and all that crap. That doesn't go with us Syracuse boys. We're straight up. That's what you gotta tell her."
"And I will," Josh said, pointing back toward the cabins. "But alone. I've got to do it alone, Benji."
"'Cause you just said she was a traitor, but now you look kind of mushy," Benji said.
"Trust me."
"I just care about you, man," Benji said, nodding wisely. "I know it's tough. I know all about girls and what they can do to you, get you in their spell and all that, but if you can break free, it'll be better in the long run. You're the man, Josh. You deserve someone who'd walk on water for you."
"You mean walk through fire?" Josh said.
Benji looked at him with serious eyes and said,
"That too, brother. I mean both."
Benji held up his hand. Josh slapped him five. They clasped hands, and Benji pulled him into a hug before breaking away and disappearing back down the path. Josh turned and followed the trail. The trees soon thinned, and he saw the rocky stream. Sunlight filtered through the leaves, and the gurgling water calmed his nerves. Jaden sat with her back to him atop a giant boulder, staring at her reflection in a flat pool of water. Josh walked up to her and cleared his throat. Jaden jumped and spun, slipping from the rock and stumbling into the shallow pool of water, shattering its still surface. Her expression changed from shock to anger before crumbling into a tortured sob.
"Josh," she said, leaning toward him, "I did something horrible."
Chapter 33.
Jaden hugged him, and Josh kept his hands stiff to his sides. She was crying.
"You told Mickey Jr. what I saw right in front of Myron," Josh said quietly.
She nodded her head against his shoulder.
"I know," Josh said. "He paid me a visit."
Jaden separated from him, holding his elbows.
"Are you okay?"
"For now," Josh said, shrugging. "He basically told me to keep out of it, or I'd be sorry."
"He threatened you?"
"He said the whole thing never happened," Josh said.
"He said if I made any noise, the media would do a big story on my dad and make him look really bad. He said Nike would never get near him again, and that we'd be living on the street."
Jaden groaned.
"That was so stupid. I thought Myron would just laugh and say how crazy it was, but instead he got this insane look on his face, and I knew. When I said something to Mickey Jr., he just laughed it off and said something about his dad being a little too competitive sometimes. I'm sorry, Josh. I'm so sorry."
Josh shrugged.
"You're mad,"
she said, turning away.
"I know."
"I was mad," Josh said. "But if you're sorry, then I can't stay mad."
She turned back to him, glowing.
"I appreciate that."
"Yeah,"
Josh said softly.
"That's okay."
He took a deep breath, smelling the warm scent of bark and pine needles and feeling things between them shift back to the old way. Finally, he said,
"I still feel all twisted up inside, though. I can't believe they're going to win this tournament by paying off the umpires. That is so bad. I was hoping we could win this thing. Nike told my dad he'd get a 5-year contract if we did."
"What are you going to do?"
Jaden asked.
Josh shrugged and said, "Just play and hopefully make it to the championship, and then they'll roll over us. Like Myron said to me, that's not how it works."
"Because you don't want Myron coming after you,"
Jaden said.
"Honestly, that guy is scary,"
Josh said.
"Even if I could prove it, which I don't see how I can, there's no way I'm going to have him coming after me for telling people about them cheating."
"But you don't have to tell people,"
Jaden said.
"Well, what are you talking about?"
he asked.
"It's bad enough they're doing this,"
Jaden said.
"But it's 100 times worse if I'm the one who helped them, even if it wasn't on purpose. You don't have to be the one to tell everyone and ruin their plan. I will."
Chapter 34. As the week went on, the weather stayed nice. Bright blue skies, puffy clouds, and warm afternoon sun washed over the mountains, woods, and baseball fields. Whether they hit home runs or dropped pop flies, the players all found their eyes drawn over and over to the college scouts who wore caps from their various universities and jotted down endless notes. Josh and the Titans won their second game, overcoming the Toronto Eagles and Chase Corcoran's slider. Josh was surprised when he looked up into the stands during the game to see Mickey Mullen Jr. scouting the Titans, but instead of being a distraction, Josh used the rival's presence to spur him on to another stellar performance. By the time it was over, Josh had hit 5 home runs between the first 2 games, resulting in several interviews for television stations as well as newspapers. The matchup between his bat and Mickey Mullen Jr.'s pitching seemed to be growing into a major story. Wednesday afternoon, the entire Dream Park was abuzz with news of Mickey Jr.'s no-hitter that morning and the Comets' advancement to the semifinals. Josh felt the challenge and rose to the occasion himself in their afternoon quarterfinal game against a team from Dallas. Josh went 3-for-4, belting 2 out of the park and helping to get the Titans 1 game closer to the big matchup. After the game, a man in sunglasses and a faded denim shirt and jeans approached Josh.
"Some game, buddy," the man said. "At least the Mullen kid might have some competition somewhere in this thing. I'm Stu Listen. I'm a producer for Bob Costas."
The man named Stu angled his head over his shoulder at Field 7, the place where Mickey Jr. had pitched his no-hitter for the Comets earlier in the day. But Josh forgot about his rival, feeling instead a pulse of excitement at the name Bob Costas, one of the most famous sports announcers ever.
We're doing a piece on Mickey Mullen and his son for HBO, Stu said. The kid is something. You heard about that no-hitter he pitched this morning, right?
Yeah, Josh said flatly. I heard about it.
Incredible. But we keep hearing about you Titans guys, too, and you in particular, Stu said. 5 home runs in 2 games? And then we were over there shooting some B-roll, and I heard you got 2 more today, and that scar.
Josh touched the smooth ridge beneath his eye.
Did you really have a plate put in your face just so you could play? Stu asked.
Josh nodded, thinking how it would look on TV. Stu got a faraway look in his eyes and seemed to have read Josh's mind when he said,
See, that's great. Shows how much you love this game. Bob loves a kid with passion for the sport. So we know it's not certain, but if you win the next one and the Comets stay on track, it'll be you guys facing off in the championship. Bob wants to get a counterpoint to Mickey Jr. for the show. Arrival. Make it like some kind of monster movie, you know?
Josh felt his scar again, wondering if he meant Josh looked like a monster.
King Kong versus Godzilla? Stu said,
without seeming to notice Josh's discomfort.
Predator versus Alien? People love that stuff. Someone told me that your dad used to play a little baseball too, so that could be another nice angle. Rich versus poor, famous versus the unknown.
He played for 13 years in the pros, Josh said, forgetting his scar and raising his chin. Now he's our coach. Stu began to smile, then nodded seriously.
In the minors, right? It doesn't matter. The thing is, you two kids, both of you pretty advanced for your ages. Both with dads who played, so we're thinking, if you keep winning, a kind of roundtable interview with you two and Bob for Inside Sports. What do you think?
Chapter 35. Josh's parents said that, of course, he could do the interview, but his dad wasn't as excited as Josh thought he'd be about Josh meeting and being interviewed for HBO by Bob Costas.
Oh, Costas is great, his dad said on the bus ride back to camp. One of my favorite announcers, a legend, but that media stuff is harder than it looks.
What? Josh said. You just answer the questions, be yourself. What could be hard? His dad gave him a funny look, then shrugged.
Well, if you're going to be in the big leagues one day, you might as well learn the ropes right now. It's a great opportunity. Bob Costas and HBO is about as big as it gets. We have to beat the South Carolina team in the semifinals first, though. If nothing else, it'll give you a good incentive.
Come on, Dad, Josh said. Winning is all the incentive I need, right?
His dad smiled hard at that and nodded his approval. The next day it rained, but the tournament had built 2 days into the schedule for just such possibilities, so it was no big deal. Josh's dad had the team bus take them all on a trip to the Farmers Museum. While everyone groaned about it at first, they actually ended up enjoying the trip because of a real live blacksmith who put on a show with sparks and steam and red-hot iron. Afterward, they all went to the Southside Mall in Oneonta for a movie before returning to the camp for dinner. Josh and his family sat down with Jaden and her dad, along with Benji, but Jaden said few words. It wasn't until afterward, when Benji had returned to the cabin to use the bathroom and Josh waited with Jaden for her limo ride to yet another media party, that he was able to quiz her on what she'd found out during the day.
Nothing from Mickey Jr. or his dad, Jaden said,
shaking her head and looking off into the meadow where fireflies blinked in the high grass.
They spent most of the day in their suite playing Xbox 360 with all kinds of people hanging around. Neither said a word about Seavers, and I didn't even see Myron. Honestly, Josh, in their game yesterday, if I didn't know about what you saw, I would never have guessed there was some kind of bribery going on. I mean, he made a couple questionable calls, but nothing anyone went crazy about.
Josh frowned and said,
Yeah, but they blew that team away, right? It would make sense that he only makes the calls if they need him to. Kind of an insurance policy to make sure they win for the whole media show. It's like making a movie for Mickey Mullen. You gotta admit that it's strange that he'd be the umpire for all the Comets games to begin with.
Right, she said. So I looked into Seavers a bit. First of all, I didn't even know this, but there are no standards or anything for umpires in Little League Baseball. It's just whoever's done it before and at local levels. A lot of times, that's just high school kids or dads who are willing to put up with the grief. I talked to a couple of people around town, and the word on the guy is that he inherited that house from his dead wife's family and doesn't put a dime into it. He runs a ski resort down in Pennsylvania. Then he heads off to Las Vegas and usually loses everything he made before coming here for the summer.
Jaden looked around to scope out the shadows surrounding them before continuing.
Seavers umpires while he's here to make extra money. Been doing it for years, and all of a sudden the head umpire for the tournament bailed out. Seavers made a big pitch for the job, and he'd been umping summer games for years, so they gave it to him. Because he's the head umpire, he controls the schedule, so it's easy to make sure he works all the Comets games. I'm sure people figure he does it just to be around the excitement, the cameras and all that, not to cheat. Also, I checked the snow reports from last winter, and I'm betting Seavers really needs the money this year because temperatures were the warmest they've been in 27 years, and the snow total was half what it normally is.
So, Josh said, he lives in a rundown house with its own graveyard. He gambles and usually loses, and we think that somehow Mickey Mullen offered him something he couldn't refuse. Money. Jaden shrugged and looked up at the star-filled sky.
And all the guy has to do is make a couple really crappy calls, Josh said, which happens all the time anyway. Only not on purpose, Jaden said, directing her stare at him. I don't know, Josh. Even with all the circumstantial evidence, we still need to prove it. That's the key. How'd you find out all this stuff anyway? Josh asked. I keep telling you, Jaden said. I'm a reporter.
Right, Josh said, nodding.
I know that. Like Bob Costas. I met him, Jaden said.
Was he nice? Josh asked.
Yes, she said. But it's like he's so smart he can look right into your head and see the wheels turning.
Great, Josh said. That's all I need. A guy looking right through me in a TV interview.
You're nervous?
Jaden asked as the headlight beams from the approaching limo flashed across them.
I wasn't, Josh said, touching his scar.
Then my dad gave me this "it's a lot harder than it looks" speech. Mickey Jr. grew up with the cameras in his face. I don't want to look like some goofball sitting there choking on my own spit.
Just breathe deep,
Jaden said as the car pulled to a stop and the driver got out to open the door.
That's what they say anyway.
And this scar, Josh said.
You'll be fine,
Jaden said, sliding into the back seat.
Sure.
Have fun, Josh said.
It's work, really,
Jaden said.
You don't get that, but thanks.
The driver closed the door, rounded the car, and the limo pulled away. Benji appeared, still drying his hands on a wad of paper towels. Benji stared at the car until it disappeared around the bend, then said,
You ever think that she might be working for the enemy?
The Comets?
That's their limo she's riding around in,
Benji said.
I think she's just doing her job, Benji, Josh said, thinking of the plan he and Jaden had worked out together.
She's our friend.
Yeah,
Benji said.
That's true. But with women, buddy, anything's possible. Anything at all.
Chapter 36. Even though the Comets weren't playing their semifinal game until Saturday morning, the Titans played theirs on Friday afternoon. Josh nailed a single and blasted two more home runs to help them beat a team from South Carolina by a run. The Titans went crazy, screaming to one another how great they were and chanting, "Championship! Championship! Championship!" over and over. Stu Lissin was the first person to greet Josh after the excitement had waned and he left the dugout with his bat bag.
"Nice," Stu said,
clapping Josh on the shoulder and grinning at his dad.
"So, what do you think, Mr. LeBlanc? Can we shoot that interview tonight?"
"But the Comets aren't in it for sure yet,"
Josh said, the words escaping his mouth before he could even think. Stu gave him a funny smile, then said,
"Yeah, they're semis tomorrow, but the way they've been looking, we feel pretty comfortable with going ahead anyway."
Stu turned back to Josh's dad and said,
"The Mullins are on board, and they'll fly Josh down to New York this afternoon in their private jet.
We'll shoot the round table and have him back here by 8 or 9 at the latest. You good?
Josh looked up at his dad. The thought of flying in a private jet and going to New York City for an HBO interview with Bob Costas made him forget all about the scandal he hoped to uncover, as well as the ill feelings he had for Mickey Mullen and his son.
I'll just have to check in with his mom, Josh's dad said. Today sounds good to me, though. A great opportunity.
Of course, Stu said. You check with the missus and let me know. I'll give you my cell number. If your wife is worried about him being alone, we can have Mickey Jr.'s girlfriend fly down, too. She's with your hometown paper, right?
Josh's stomach twisted at the description of Jaden as Mickey Jr.'s girlfriend.
That would probably be nice, his dad said.
Sure, Stu said. She's practically part of the Mullen entourage. Bob likes her spirit, too. Says she's a real firecracker.
Chapter 37 2 hours later, Josh was sitting with Jaden in the back of the big white limousine that she seemed quite comfortable in. Josh's mom had dressed him in a white button-down dress shirt, a pair of dark blue pants, and black shoes for the occasion. Josh felt like he was going to church, but he trusted his mom when she said he needed to look good for the camera. Several times during the ride, he cleared his throat to say something to Jaden about the girlfriend thing, but for some reason, he couldn't bring himself to do it.
You feeling okay?
Jaden asked. She wore jeans and a pink polo shirt, but she wasn't going to be on camera.
Great, he said. You keep coughing and touching your scar.
Josh left his face alone, faked another cough, and patted his chest.
My allergies.
I didn't know you have allergies, she said.
Just a little sometimes, Josh said, and turned his attention to the green trees whizzing by outside the window and to forcing his hands to stay at his sides.
When the limo pulled out onto the tarmac of the small airfield, Josh rolled down the window to get a better look at the plane. It looked like a white shark with wings. Engines the size of refrigerators framed its tail. The skin of the plane caught the afternoon light and flung it back at Josh's eyes, making it hard to look at the big machine for more than a glance. On board, Mickey Mullen talked on a cell phone as he sat in a beige leather reclining seat beside Myron Underwood. But even Myron's mean look couldn't dampen the excitement Josh felt as Mickey Mullen slapped him a high five while he followed Jaden up the short aisle past a handful of other people to the back, where Mickey Jr. sat in one of four seats facing each other. Josh looked at Mickey Jr.'s sneakers, tattered jeans, and gray hoodie before he fumbled to undo the top button of his dress shirt. Mickey Jr. was playing on a Nintendo DX, hammering away at it for another couple minutes while Jaden and Josh buckled in and just stared around at the shiny reddish-brown wood, brass fixtures, and soft leather upholstery. When he finished his game, Mickey Jr. tucked the PSP into the big front pocket of his sweatshirt and signaled to the flight attendant up in the front. The plane began to roll down the runway as she appeared, and he ordered sandwiches and sodas for them all. She nodded and returned to her seat, buckling in. The plane's engines roared suddenly, and they catapulted down the runway. Josh gripped the armrests of his seat as they rocketed nearly straight up. Once they leveled out, the sandwiches came. Josh waited until Mickey Jr. took one off the tray before reaching into the pile himself. The roast beef and American cheese seemed to melt in Josh's mouth almost without chewing, and soon they were flying high above the clouds and picking at a second tray of strawberries dipped in dark chocolate. Without being obvious, Josh tried to follow Mickey Jr.'s lead on virtually everything. But while Mickey Jr. seemed relaxed and right at home, Josh knew his own speech, like his actions, was stiff and uneasy. After a nosedive landing and a short taxi on the runway, they all got off and boarded two limousines that rushed the entire group into New York City through the Lincoln Tunnel. Josh couldn't help feeling important as he stepped out of the limousine and marched along with the rest of the group into the HBO studios. After passing the security desk without stopping, they all rode up an elevator together, then went down a long hall.
Josh could see Mickey Mullen up ahead of the group with people orbiting around him like he was the sun, even as he moved. They were shown into a room full of comfortable couches where the coffee tables and cabinets along the walls had been lined with more trays of elegant food and drinks. Josh sat on a couch next to Jaden. Mickey Jr. sat on her other side and removed the Nintendo DX from his sweatshirt front pocket. He joked to Jaden that he was addicted to it before he began to play. Josh leaned close to Jaden, his eyes on the pale yellow walls, and said, "I heard someone say this is the green room, but it's yellow." Jaden smiled and glanced at Mickey Jr. before she leaned toward Josh and in a low voice said, "They call it a green room. It's just a TV term for the waiting room before you go on air or into a shoot." Josh nodded like he knew that. It wasn't long before a woman in jeans and thick plastic glasses appeared with a clipboard and asked for Josh and Mickey Jr. to come with her to makeup. Jaden followed, and Josh cast a look at her over his shoulder with a questioning shrug. She didn't get to answer before they were whisked into a room that could have been a small hair salon with its three barber chairs facing a mirror and counter covered with scissors, blow dryers, hair products, and boxes of makeup. Josh looked over at Mickey Jr., who had slumped himself down in a chair and continued to play, even as a young woman, a makeup artist, with orange hair draped a plastic cape around his neck. Josh sat in the next chair and watched as a second woman, a hairstylist, picked up a pair of scissors and began to snip at his hair. Too nervous to complain or even ask how much she planned to cut, Josh watched in the mirror as the makeup artist applied makeup to Mickey Jr.'s face. The hairstylist stood back, primping his hair, and then told him to close his eyes as she unloaded a cloud of spray onto his head. When the makeup artist finished with Mickey Jr., she swapped places with the hairstylist and bent over so that her face hung just over Josh's shoulder as she looked at him in the mirror. She said, directing one of her long pink and white nails toward his cheek. "I'll do my best to cover this, but I don't think I can hide it all."